Okay, so again, I'll apologize to the people in the audience who might have heard this before, and feel free to leave if you're bored. So I'll be talking on some things related to work with Cacezo and Vafa from earlier this year. And the idea is to construct some four-dimensional n=1 supersymmetric field theories by wrapping D-brains on deformed or resolved conifold geometries. And in this talk, I'll be mostly interested in the field theory limit, so we'll be interested in taking some decoupling limit where we decouple string effects holding the Yang-Mills coupling fixed. And these will be some asymptotically free theories, and so as we go to the infrared, the coupling increases, and it'll be argued that eventually, for large G-squared n, a conifold transition occurs where we exchange the deformed and the resolved conifolds. So roughly, we exchange an S3 and an S2. And then the original wrapped D-brains disappear. And so we don't have the same original field theory from before. But instead, there's a different field theory, which is a simpler theory, which is identified as the dual of the original theory. And so this duality will be checked by comparing some holomorphic quantities, the superpotential, and the effective gauge coupling for some photon fields. The main example will be 4D n=1 UN or SUN Yang-Mills with an adjoint and general added tree level superpotential. And the dual theory will just be a product of U1 n=1 with a product of U1's gauge theory with some specified superpotential. Okay, it's probably not necessary here, but just to review the terminology. So the basic example will be we have some conifold, which is some local Calabi-Yau threefold singularity, which looks like a cone with base, which is a product of S2 and S3. And there's a singularity at the origin, which can be resolved in two different ways. The so-called deformed conifold, where we keep the S3 from shrinking down to nothing, whereas the S2 can shrink to nothing. And the resolved conifold, where we keep the S2 from shrinking to nothing, whereas the S3 can shrink to nothing. So I'll be mostly using these kind of pictures. And in this deformed case, because the S3 stays of finite size, we can wrap some brains around the S3, and this is some stable supersymmetric cycle. Whereas on this side, we could wrap brains on the S2. And again, these are supersymmetric cycles. And so we'll be interested in the transition between these two different geometries through the singular conifold. And actually, more properly, the transition looks like this. So we can shrink down the S3, that's the conifold transition. And then there are two different S2s that we can blow up, which are related by a flop. And okay, so the case where the S3 is blown up, we can think of that as the cotangent space of S3 and write a complex equation for it this way with mu sub deformation parameter. And the other case where the S2 is blown up, we can think of that as P1 with normal bundle O minus 1, O minus 1. We could write some coordinates like this. And we could also describe it in terms of a linear sigma model in this way with U1 gauge theory with these fields of these charges. And that way you see nicely the flop transition where we take this complex parameter, which is R plus theta into minus itself. Okay, so we'll be considering again type 2 string theories on these Calabi-Yau threefolds with the local geometry, which is one of these two conifolds. And then we'll get some four-dimensional theory. Okay, so if we just looked at type 2 on those geometries, we'd get a four-dimensional theory with 8 supercharges. So that's n=2 in 4 dimensions. And now what we can do is we can wrap D-brains around these stable supersymmetric cycles, filling the space-time directions. So we'll keep the four-dimensional space-time non-compact, and we'll have the D-brains fill those directions. And by doing that, we'll get a theory with four supercharges. So in the type 2A case, we'll wrap D6 brains, which are the brains that we have on hand in 2A, on an S3 of a deformed conifold, and then keeping the remaining directions in the uncompactified Minkowski space. Or in type 2B, we would wrap D5 brains on the S2 of the resolved conifold. And again, the D-brains break half the supersymmetries, so we get four-dimensional n equals one supersymmetric field theories in this way. But this description is really only good in the small g-squared n limit, where these D-brains are wrapped on some large cycle. And the 40 theories that we get are asymptotically free. So g-squared n makes sense in the ultraviolet limit, but not in the infrared. As we go to the infrared, g-squared n increases. And the idea is that eventually g-squared n becomes very, very large. And rather than using this description, we get another description, which is related to the conifold transition. And in that, after that transition, the wrapped brains disappear. Okay, so this idea about the wrapped brains disappearing, this was first appeared in a topological string version in a work by Gopakumar and Vatha from 1998. So there, they started with topological open string theory with, say, N3 brains wrapped on the S3, in this case where the S3 is blown up. And it was argued by Witten in 92 that this is equivalent to 3D SUN Chern-Simons topological field theory on S3. And then they argued that going through this geometric transition, we can describe it in terms of after the transition, where the S2 is blown up, a topological closed string theory with an S2 of size, which is related to N times the string coupling. So we see for large N, this is a good description because this is a large cycle. And on this side, we only have closed strings and the brains have disappeared. So there's some duality between this open topological string theory and closed topological string theory. And so they argued that these should be the same. And there are various checks, like the partition functions were shown to agree to all orders in 1 over n. The Wilson loop observables were shown to agree. On this side, the Wilson loop observables are not invariants, which are well known. And on this side, they were related by Oguri and Vatha to some spectrum of the M2 brain ending on the M5 brain in the Calabi-Yau. So there are lots of non-trivial checks in this topological version of this duality. Okay, last summer, Vatha had a paper on the non-topological version. So for instance, starting from 2A with the S3 blown up, we could wrap NC D6 brains on the S3 to get 4D N equals 1 UNC Yang-Mills theory. And then after the transition, we again have 2A on this conifold with the S2 blown up. And now again, there are no brains. They're NC units of this Ramond-Ramond flux in the S2. So the Ramond-Ramond flux is the same. And then you also need some Nevis-Schwarz flux in a dual four cycle. And in this case, the size of the S2 is a dynamical chiral superfield, which was identified with the glue ball field of the original Yang-Mills theory. So this S is trace W alpha squared, it's the glue ball. And the fact, and then in the vacuum, this S takes an expectation value, which is of order NC. So that's why this size of the cycle is of order NC. And in the large NC limit, this is a good description because this is a big cycle. So it was argued that these two sides should be equivalent and related by duality. And then there's also a type 2B version where we could start with D5 brains wrapped on the S2, and we get the same kind of theory that we had over here. And then we go through the geometric transition the other way to the case where the S3 is blown up. And again, there are no brains on this side. They're NC units of this Ramon-Ramon flux in the S3, F3 flux. And then there's also some Nevis-Schwarz flux in the dual 3 cycle. And again, the size of the S3 is identified with this glue ball field, and it's a border NC. Okay, and it's argued also that there's a local mirror symmetry relating these 2A and 2B descriptions. Okay, so we could work in either the 2A picture or the 2B picture. Okay, and we could draw a picture to make an analogy with the ADS-CFT correspondence. So in the ADS-CFT correspondence, if we think starting off with small g squared n, then we have some D3 brains whose world volume, say in Euclidean space, plus including the point at infinity, is S4. And then there's the directions transverse to the brain, which is R6. So we can think of that R6 as like S5. And then there's this extra direction corresponding to separating the brains. And this is the picture, which is a good picture for small g squared n. And we have these n brains, which are extended in the S4 direction. And then for large g squared n, we have this kind of transition where now we keep the S5 of fixed size, not shrinking to zero, and allow the S4 to shrink to zero. So when we allow this S4 to shrink to nothing, that gives us ADS5. And then this is the S5. And this direction is identified as increasing energy. So again, we have a duality between a theory which has brains and open strings and a theory with no brains and only closed strings. So, sorry? Do we have?
Conical transition.
Well, it's not exactly the conifold transition, but at least schematically the pictures are similar. Yeah, I don't think it's exactly the conifold transition. Okay. M-theory proof of this duality was given by Atiyah, Maldacena, and Vaffa, and Acharya. And here proof is in the same sense as in Witten's connection between Landau-Ginzburg theory and Calabi-Yau's. The idea was that you could smoothly deform one theory to the other without encountering any phase transitions. So since we want to give an M-theory description, we should work in 2A. And in 2A, we have these ND6 brains, which we could have wrapped on the S3. And because the D6 brains, we can describe in M-theory purely in terms of geometry. And when we go to M-theory, we can picture this side here as just M-theory on a G2 sevenfold, which the sevenfold is roughly R4 mod Zn. The mod Zn gives us the ND6 brains times an S3, where this S3 has some volume V. But in M-theory, this V becomes complexified. Its partner is the integral of the C3 over the S3. And now we could go through a flop type transition where we take V to V negative, and continuing V to minus V, we get this side, the M-theory lift of this side, which is roughly R4 times S3 mod Zn. So the Zn moved to the other side. And again, the idea is that there might be some singularities somewhere at some points for some values of this complex quantity, but we can always move around in a way to avoid them. And so using the fact that we have this C3, we could avoid any phase transitions, and so the two theories are equivalent in that sense.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, there's some parts of well, there's some issues which I find are confusing, like the NS4 form flex, and and also the fact that mostly what I'll be discussing is again the field theory limit, where we're taking G string to zero, holding the Yang-Mills coupling fixed. Whereas this M theory description, you know, is the full string theory picture. And okay, so I don't know if I don't have a good answer for that. Maybe the others would, but yeah, there's some. Well, I don't know if it's confusing, but the. When I discuss it a little bit more, I'll mention again this four-form flex, which is needed in some non-compact cycle of the club. Yeah. So that four-form flex is related to the Rundt coupling constant of the gauge theory. And again, in this M theory description, I think it's a little bit murkier because we haven't decoupled the gauge theory from the string theory. Okay. And this has been further analyzed in some upcoming work by Atiyah and Whitten, who argued that the lift of this conifold type transition with these three different branches lifts in M theory to some similar transition where, okay, here this is again continuing in this complex quantity, V plus IC, and as we move along in the moduli space, there might be some singularities at some isolated points, but we can always avoid them. And in fact, they argued that their triality-related G2 sevenfolds, X1, X2, and X3, which are like the different limits of this picture corresponding to going through the conifold transition. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so in this talk, I'll be discussing the 2B version, which will make things a little bit simpler because there are no worldsheet instanton corrections to the effective superpotential or Yang-Mills coupling. Again, it's also possible to do the mirror 2A version, in which case you can count the disk instantons and verify that that you get the same answer corresponding to the mirror symmetry. And again, this was worked out by Mina and Albrecht and Kumran, who also discussed the lift to M theory on the G2 sevenfolds. Okay, so in this 2B version, again, we'll be wrapping N D5 brains on an S2, and then following it through this geometric transition where the S2 blows down and the S3 blows up, and we're left with some flux, which will again be interpreted as the large G squared N limit of the original theory. So after the transition, the geometry is described in this way, and here this mu is a deformation modulus, which will be identified as the VEV of the N equals 1 chiral superfield. And I'll mention something in a few transparencies about this fact that it's only log normalizable. But one thing that I want to stress is that the difference between chiral superfields versus parameters. So here, this we really want to identify this as a chiral superfield. So if we just consider type 2B on this Calabi-Yau, we'd get four-dimensional N equals 2 U1 gauge theory. And that's broken to N equals 1 by the fluxes. So the original theory that we had had N equals 1 supersymmetry because of the D-brains, and correspondingly on this side, the theory has N equals 1 supersymmetry because of the flux. So first we'll look at the theory without the fluxes, where it's N equals 2 supersymmetric, and then include the fluxes to break it to N equals 1. Okay, so this geometry has a compact 3 cycle, which is an S3, which I'll call A, and a dual non-compact B cycle, a 3 cycle, which I'll call B, with a symplectic pairing. And we could integrate the holomorphic three form over the A cycle, and I'll call that field S. Or we could integrate the holomorphic three form over the B cycle. And in that case, because it's a non-compact cycle, we'll find some log divergence in this integral. So this lambda naught is some cutoff to cut off that log divergence. And so I'll call this this field pi, and we could write that as the derivative of a prepotential with respect to S. This is because this theory has n equals 2 supersymmetry before we turn on the fluxes. Okay, so in the theory without the fluxes, this S is an n equals 1 chiral superfield, which is the chiral superfield that's in the n equals 2 U1 vector multiplet. So somehow I don't have this on the transparency, but there's a U1 gauge field in here because of reducing C4, the C4 Ramond-Ramond field on the three cycle. And so if we just looked at if we look at 2B on this geometry, because of this three cycle, we can reduce the C4 Ramond-Ramond field on this three cycle to get a U1 gauge field. And that's the origin of this n equals 2 U1 gauge field. And we know that in the n equals 2 vector multiplet, there's an n equals 1 chiral superfield related to that photon. And that's this same field S, which is the integral of the three form over that A cycle. So this, in the n equals 2 theory, this S is arbitrary, and that's the Coulomb branch of this U1 theory. And if we plug in this geometry and the expression for the holomorphic three form, we find that this deformation parameter is this field S. So again, that's why we'd like to identify that as a dynamical field, just like here this U1 is dynamical. And if we look at the B period of the holomorphic three form, we get this kind of expression involving logs of S. So again, this lambda naught is some cutoff, and this is we're going to assume that it's large. So there's some order of 1 over lambda naught terms which will be dropped. And this pi we could write again as the derivative of the prepotential with respect to S. And this is the prepotential for n equals 2 U1 with the charge 1 hypermultiplet. So that's how this logarithmic behavior was interpreted by Strominger, who argued that this is what you would have for an n equals 2 U1 with the charge 1 hypermultiplet. And that hypermultiplet just comes from the D3 brain wrapped on the S3. So now when we turn on the fluxes, we'll break n equals 2 to n equals 1 by an added superpotential, which is given in terms of the fluxes in this way. So here H is the Ramond-Ramond three form plus tau times the Nevis-Schwarz three form. So in this case, because I'm working in the 2B side, we don't have to worry about the Nevis-Schwarz four form. It's just the Nevis-Schwarz three form. And so we can write the superpotential this way in terms of the integral of H over the A cycle and the integral of the holomorphic three form over the B cycle, which is what we're calling pi, minus the opposite. And the integral of H over the A cycle is the number of units of Ramond-Ramond flux, which is the number of D5 brains in the original side. And the integral of H over the B cycle is this Nevis-Schwarz flux, which will relate to the bare coupling constant of the original theory. So in the end, what the flux gives is a superpotential, which is n times this period over the B cycle plus this Ramond-Ramond flux times S, the period over the A cycle. And so if we plug in what pi is, we get this kind of an expression for the superpotential. And again, this alpha is related to the bare coupling constant of the original theory. And what we'd like to do is we'd like to take this infrared cutoff on the size of the non-compact cycle of the Clavier to infinity, but we'd like to do it in such a way that this thing in the parentheses stays finite. And so in order to do that, alpha has to be tuned relative to this cutoff in this way. So we take lambda naught to infinity, holding this quantity fixed, and that tells us that this running coupling constant should run in this way. And that's good, because this is exactly the expected running coupling constant of the original UN theory, which we get from the beta function, because this theory is asymptotically free. So this lambda naught is again the long distance or infrared cutoff in the Clavier, but it ends up becoming the dynamical scale of the UN theory, which is kind of like the ultraviolet scale. So this is the usual kind of interplay between UV and IR, which is common for brains. So in the case that we're looking at, it's not really like Klebanov and Strassler. So it's, well, it is possible to look at examples which are like that from this geometric point of view also, but the case that we're looking at, the original field theory is just, actually here I'm just talking about pure UN Yang-Mills theory so far, yeah. So there's no matter fields and there's no duality, but actually it is possible to look at these kind of product groups where you get this cascade in N. But here this is just pure Yang-Mills. Okay, so the upshot is that we have a dual U1 theory with fluxes which gives this superpotential. And this superpotential is exactly the usual Veneziano-Yankelevich superpotential for the glue ball field of the pure UN Yang-Mills theory. So the vacuum of this theory we get by setting dWdS to zero, and we see that we get the n different vacua of the pure UN Yang-Mills theory. So in these different vacua, S is massive, and because we started off with UN rather than SUN, there's still a n equals one U1 photon, which is left massless, and that's what we identify as this U1 of the dual theory. So it was important in that way that we started off with UN rather than SUN. So this dual photon has a coupling which I'll call tau effective, which is another one of the holomorphic observables of the theory. And here this can be determined just from the superpotential. Tau is d pi ds, and if we write pi in terms of the prepotential, and because the superpotential is also written this way in terms of pi, we can see that tau is just minus alpha over n, where alpha is the original bare coupling in the vacua S, which is determined from the superpotential. So because it's just the original bare coupling divided by n, we can identify it as exactly the original, some overall U1 subgroup of the original UN theory. So it's the subgroup generated by the identity divided by n to give us this 1 over n. So the original UN, we can write it as U1 times SUN. The SUN confines, and we're just left with this same U1. And it basically just goes for the ride, so that's why its coupling is the same as the original bare coupling that we started with. And this also fits with the description of the dual U1 in terms of having a charge 1 hypermultiplet from a D3 brain wrapped on the S3. Because once we add the n units of this F3 Ramon-Vermon flux in the S3, then what we find is that n fundamental strings will end on this wrapped D3 brain. So the wrapped D3 brain, which we were giving charge 1, really is a baryon of the original UN theory. So this agrees with saying that this overall U1 is sort of this generator of the original UN, which gives a baryon charge 1. And this baryon, which is the strap D3 brain, gets a mass which is of order S, which is again lambda cubed in the vacuum of this theory. Only this baryon field, which gets massive in the end. And in the original theory, it was just, you know, a decoupled U1. So here there's this massive baryon after the transition. Okay, so this was just the pure Yang-Mills case. And so in that case, it was the expressions for the superpotential and effective gauge coupling were fairly simple. So what I'll talk about in the rest of the talk was some generalized Conifold transitions, which I looked at with Cacezzo and Vaffa earlier this year. So in these generalized transitions, we'll have, say, n different S2s, and we can wrap D5 brains around any of these different S2s, and then follow all of them through the transition to get n different S3s, which are blown up, and then we'll have n units of Ramond-Ramond fluxes in these different S3s. So this is the geometric transition. Before the transition, the theory which we get on this side is four-dimensional n equals one UN gauge theory with an adjoint and with this tree-level superpotential involving terms up to degree n plus one if there are n of these different cycles. And in this side, these GPs are free parameters in the geometry. We can fix them at infinity. There are no kinetic terms, and they don't fluctuate. In terms of the counting of parameters, one of them can be shifted away and another can be scaled into lambda. So compared to the previous case, which I discussed, which is the n equals one case, there are n minus one new parameters, which we can vary. Yes?
When you only have one three space, that transition was, you thought it was narrative. On both sides, you sometimes think it's space.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Okay, so again, this is the field theory that we're looking at, n equals one UN with this superpotential. And in the vacuum of that theory, we set dw d phi to zero. And so that tells us that phi can have eigenvalues, which are any of the roots of this nth order polynomial. So in one of the vacua, we can take, say, n1 eigenvalues to be the root a1, n2 to be the root a2, all the way up to an. And that vacuum, we have un broken down to this product uni. And that's what we identify as this original picture where we have ni d5 brains wrapped around the different s2i's. So this choice of these different ni's is related to what field theory vacuum we're in. And again, each one of these UNIs has, it's just a pure Yang-Mills theory. And so we can write each UNI as an SUNI, which then confines, times U1, which is free. So the massless spectrum just is an N equals one theory with N different U1s. It's a Coulomb theory. And the holomorphic observables, which are the quantities which we can often obtain exactly, are the effective superpotential as a function of these parameters GP and the superpotential and lambda, and also the effective gauge coupling for these photons as a function of GP and lambda. And these are some highly non-trivial quantities as a function of these couplings. Yes?
You're talking about geometry.
Well, it knows. Yeah, so, I mean, in this picture here, we can have strings that connect these different D-brains. And it's those strings which connect the D-brains wrapped around the different cycles, which is how it really knows that it's part of a UN theory, rather than that. Yeah, so the positions of those S2s are related to these parameters GP. And so by tuning these parameters GP, you could separate them very, very far away, and that would be a vacuum where UN is Higgs down to this product of UNI at a very, very high scale. And in that case, it would almost look like a bunch of decoupled UNIs. But by varying these parameters, GP and lambda, it really remembers that it came from a UN theory. And that's why it's something more non-trivial than the last case, because we can't really just sum up the solution of the last case for all the UNIs. They're interesting effects, precisely because it remembers that it came from a UN theory. Yeah, we can. Those can be varied arbitrarily by varying these GPs, and which are some free parameters that we can vary in the geometry. You can vary them arbitrarily in the geometry. That is possible. That's right. Yeah, in this local clavier. Yeah.
Typically in such theory, you set all the GPs to zero. You get a host of massless states, tensionless fluids, and things like that. Can you see that?
Yeah, you can. Well, in this. Okay, I'm not sure about. It would be interesting to better understand after the transition, directly how to see that. But indirectly, in any case, you can see it by the behavior of these quantities. So we really focused on determining these quantities, but. Yeah, there should be a way to see, I would think, in more detail the spectrum after the transition in the cases where there's a more interesting massless spectrum. You would see a corresponding singularity after the transition in the geometry, so you'd have to interpret the string theory on that singularity after the transition, and I guess you would say that because of wrapped D3 brains on the different S3s, which are not completely resolved, that you would see some additional matter fields. So the geometric construction of the original theory, can be found from some work of Kachru, Katz, Lawrence, and McGreevy. So we start with a local Calabi-Yau threefold, which is a P1 with this normal bundle O minus 2 plus O 0. And we deform that to get to include the superpotential. So we can write some local coordinates in this way. This is the P1, this is the O0, here's the O minus 2, and this is the superpotential which is added. So those parameters, GP, are in here, and we could make those whatever we like there. So this gives these n different S2s, which the S2s are just this coordinate Z, and we get n of them at u equals u prime equals 0, and x is any one of the roots of the superpotential, W prime equals zero. Okay, so now we can wrap the Ni D5 brains on the S2Is and follow through these geometric transitions. And after the transition, we get a new geometry, which we could again describe in terms of the superpotential. So this is just as a reminder that this is a degree n polynomial in t. I guess I'm being a little schizophrenic whether I'm using t or x, but and then with these other complex coordinates. And this fn minus 1 is the deformations of this. And so it's important here that this is degree n minus 1. These are all the normalizable deformations of this singularity. So this is normalizable in the sense of Gutkov, Vafa, and Witten. And the normalizable deformations are identified as the VEVs of fluctuating chiral superfields rather than parameters. So these GPs or AI were parameters which were fixed, whereas here the coefficients in this are identified as chiral superfields. And this normalizable condition, we could write this way. If we write F as a general polynomial in T, then we want this integral here from some fixed point in the Clavijal out to infinity to be finite in order for these fields to have finite kinetic terms and therefore fluctuate. So if we plug in what the holomorphic three form is, we see that that this normalizable condition is satisfied for k equals zero up to n minus one. Actually, the n minus one case is a little bit tricky because that's, in that case, really we do get infinity, but it's a logarithmic divergence. So this one's only log normalizable, but we argue you still need to include it. Okay, so the theory after the transition is 2B on this geometry. And the theory without fluxes would be four-dimensional n equals 2 supersymmetric u1 to the n, where the photons, again, come from the C4 field reduced on these n different three cycles. And the integral of the holomorphic three form over those three cycles gives us the SI, which are the chiral superfields in the vector multiplets of those photons. And if we plug in what the holomorphic three form is in terms of this geometry, we see that we can solve for the n coefficients in this polynomial in terms of these n different SIs. So this again shows that it was important here that this was a degree n minus one polynomial and that we have these n coefficients, which are basically the n different SIs, which are in the vector multiplet of this dynamical u1 to the n. And then the dual periods, we can write again as the integral of the holomorphic three form over the n different b cycles. And again, these are logarithmically divergent, so we need a long distance cutoff in the Clavijal. And we can write this as the derivative of the prepotential in terms of the prepotential. And this is the prepotential. Again, this prepotential will have some interesting behavior with logarithmic with monodromes coming from the logs and things like that, which could again be interpreted as arising from some charged hypermultiplets, which are D3 brains wrapped on the different S3 Allestrominger. So now we add the fluxes to break n equals 2 to n equals 1 by the superpotential. And so what we're left with is this u1 to the n theory with the superpotential. And the claim is that that's dual to the original un theory with this tree level superpotential. So just to summarize, the original theory was n equals 1 un with this adjoint and this superpotential with these parameters. The un is Higgs to this product of uni by the vacuum of the superpotential. The suni confine, and so we're just left with u1 to the n, which is massless. And then we can include also these glue ball fields, si, which is trace w alpha squared, in each one of the SUNIs. So we can write a superpotential as a function of these SIs and the parameters GP and lambda. And these will be some very non-trivial quantities. And then in the dual theory, we have this geometry, which gives us n equals 1, u1 to the n, with the n chiral superfields Si, which we identify as the glue ball fields of the original theory. And we'll get some superpotential as a function of those glue ball fields and parameters by these fluxes, which just gives us the superpotential in this form, where Si and pi we can determine explicitly in terms of the geometry, the integral of the holomorphic three form over the A and B cycles. And we could also look at the effective gauge coupling for these n photons, and that just comes in terms of the derivative of this pi cycle, pi I with respect to Sj. Okay, so one thing which is surprising in this picture is how simple the n dependence is. In this dual description, the n dependence only appears in these coefficients, here ni, whereas these functions, pi I, they're completely independent of n. They just depend on GP and lambda. So at least I found that surprising, that the n dependence, which in terms of the original theory, it looks like it's going to be very complicated, comes out so simple in this dual. Okay, so in the dual description, we could obtain those observables, the superpotential and the effective gauge coupling, just by doing these kinds of integrals. So these exact quantities in the field theory are reduced to these integrals, which we could just explicitly evaluate. So here there are some complex integrals in the complex plane. So these A's are the different roots of our tree-level superpotential, and they get deformed because of these deformation parameters. And these integrals to infinity are the cycles that give us the B cycles. Okay, so we did various checks of this duality. So some general checks which can be made. One is to analyze the monodromes of these periods pi, and therefore of the superpotential, under various things like rotating this dynamical scale lambda around in the complex plane, or rotating the different AIs around each other. And so by doing that, it's possible to show that the exact superpotential is of this form. It has some logarithmic dependence on the Si and some quantities which I'll call lambda I, plus single value terms. And so the only the part which isn't single valued is determined exactly here. And these lambda I's are determined in terms of the AIs and the lambdas in this way. And this is a nice result, because this is precisely the answer expected from naive integrating in analysis of the field theory. So here these lambda I's can be interpreted as the dynamical scale of the SUNI gauge theory, with some naive threshold matching of the running coupling constant coming from the beta functions. So this factor here is exactly what you would get from integrating out the massive adjoints, and this factor here is exactly what you would get out from integrating out the massive W bosons. But the geometric transition dual gives generally infinite number of non-trivial quantum corrections to the superpotential. So this plus single valued actually contains an infinite number of non-trivial quantum corrections. And so that shows that this naive integrating in analysis isn't exact. And so it's interesting to try to check whether those single value terms agree with the field theory analysis. So it is possible to check some of this by using the Seiberg-Witten type solution of the n equals 2 theory. So we could think of the theory that we have as n equals 2 deformed to n equals 1 by the superpotential. And the n equals 2 theory is described by this kind of a curve. So this is a genus n curve for the original UN theory. And then we deform that by adding this tree-level superpotential. And when we do that, there are vacua only at the places where there are some mutually local monopoles which are massless and condensed. So we know how many we need to become massless and condensed. We should have this many to reduce the number to reduce the rank down from big N to little n. And the remaining cycles, the n remaining cycles, which don't, so those cycles degenerate, and the n, little n remaining cycles, which don't degenerate, give us the effective gauge coupling. And then the effective superpotential we get just by taking the tree level superpotential and plugging in the vacua, which are at the locations where these monopoles are massless and condense. So in principle, we know how to find these vacua. They're at solutions of solving this equation. We take this characteristic polynomial. This is the condition that the discriminant, that some of the roots of the discriminants coincide. So we want this order n polynomial squared minus this constant to be of this form, an order big N minus little n polynomial squared times an order 2n polynomial. So we find the solutions of this, and then this tau is given by the periods of this curve, just y squared is this order 2n polynomial in x. So this is what we need to do to check it, but actually this is easier said than done. It's complicated in general to solve this equation, even though it's easy to state. We just want to square this order n polynomial in x and then tune these coefficients in order to get the roots to coincide. We didn't find a nice general solution. For the case, for instance, where this little n is big N minus 1, the solution is to set this Pn to a Chebyshev polynomial. But more generally, I don't know what's the solution. Okay, one comment is that this geometric transition dual gives the effective superpotential as a function of these parameters, g and lambda, and also the Glueball fields. And but these Glueball fields don't appear in the n equals 2 Seiberg-Witten curves, and it's not really known how to include them there. So to actually compare the results between the n equals 2 analysis and what the geometric dual gives, we have to integrate out the Glueball fields from the geometric dual. So we set these SIs to their expectation values just by looking at setting them at the minimum of the superpotential. And that gives the effective superpotential and gauge coupling in terms of just the parameters with the Glueball fields integrated out. So that's the thing which we could compare to the n equals 2 curve. So if you believe the dependence on these Glueball fields SI, then the geometric dual gives more information. Okay, another check. Well, one general check is that a general result from the geometric transition dual is that these little n photons have a gauge coupling, which is given in terms of, which is given by this curve in terms of the tree level superpotential squared, its derivative squared, plus these same deformations that we have had in the Clabiao. So these Fn minus 1, these are the ones whose coefficients involve the Glueball fields, and then we should set the Glueball fields to their minimum. So one check that we did was that the deformed n equals 2 curve also has this tau, which is of the same form. So it's again this tree level superpotential squared plus some order n minus 1 polynomial, but we weren't able to show that it's the same order n minus 1 polynomial. But at least the fact that it's this tree level superpotential squared plus an order n minus 1 polynomial is some check. Okay, so basically there are a bunch of non-trivial partial checks that this duality gives the same result as the field theory analysis, but no complete proof. And so without having a complete proof, it's useful to look at some examples just to see whether or not it really works. So you could explicitly check some examples, like for instance, we looked at the case where we had a cubic tree level superpotential. So then the group is broken down to a product of two groups. So we have un goes to un1 times un2. And the examples which we looked at were examples like u3n goes to un times u2n, or u5n goes to u2n times u3n. Didn't work it out in general. So just to give one of these examples, for the case where U5n goes to U3n times U2n, you find for the superpotential, it contains an infinite number of terms, and you could compute each one of these terms both using the integrals in the geometric transition dual, just the integral of the holomorphic 3 form over those cycles, or from the field theory analysis, analyzing the deformed Seiberg-Witten curves. And that way you could reproduce each one of these coefficients in two different ways. And so that gives some non-trivial check that this really works when you reproduce all of these coefficients. So you find perfect agreement for each term between those two different descriptions. So that gives some confidence that it really works. So in general, this geometric transition dual gives these kinds of answers in a much simpler fashion than the direct field theory analysis. And so it's a simpler way to get these exact answers. It includes the glue ball fields Si. The n dependence is only in these coefficients of pi I. And the problem is basically solved using the geometry up to evaluating some integrals. And this was recently generalized to SO and SP by these authors. And there are many further generalizations which Kumrun discussed more in the Avatars conference, like n equals one quiver gauge theories based on general ADE or affine ADE Dinkin diagrams, where these are, you could think of as starting with the n equals two version of those theories and breaking to n equals one by general tree level superpotentials for each one of the different groups. So everything that I discussed in this talk was just the A1 case, but it could be worked out for general ADE and A hat, D hat, E hat cases. So in all these cases, you find some large N dualities from these geometric transitions where an S2 is replaced with an S3. And you also find Seiberg-type dualities or these kinds of cascading, like in Klebanov-Strassler from dualities where you exchange S2s with each other. So just to summarize, the geometry gives new information about N equals one supersymmetric field theories and dualities. It gives non-trivial quantitative results and also gives some new qualitative insights. So that's the end. Well, it points to new dualities, which weren't really suspected before, which I think, in principle, you could use these dualities. I think that the different field theory dualities that it points to haven't really been completely worked out, but in principle, I think, you know, the description which I gave, for instance, in terms of the geometry after the transition was in terms of actually evaluating these superpotentials and effective gauge couplings by evaluating these integrals of the holomorphic 3 form. But I think also qualitatively it shows that there's this duality between a UN theory and a U1 to the N theory, which I think needs to be better understood. But and then in these other more general cases, you see like Seiberg-type dualities coming from these geometric transitions. So I think it points to some new examples of duality. I'm not sure if it gives anything better for qualitative insights, but one could hope.
Did you say something about this NS4 form problem and
Oh, okay. So, so basically the. Well, so the picture was that we have some compact A cycle and this kind of non-compact B cycle. And effectively, you need to make the B cycle compact. And so that's why you need this cutoff lambda 0. And also to include the running coupling of the original gauge theory, you need some Nevis-Schwarz flux in this cycle. So in the 2B description that I was discussing, This is just this H3 Nevis-Schwarz flux, so it's not as confusing. But on the 2A side, Mina's shaking her no. on the 2A side, this was you know by mirror symmetry that this should be related to some four-form, Nevis-Schwarz four-form, which I should let Mina explain. Yeah, I mean, I guess Vafa had this, some description of it in terms of the lack of integrability of complex structure. Yeah, I know Vir. Okay. I know I've gotten lots of complaints about it from other people, but.
Once you go to the other side, because you plot the conical condition, without naively, the degree of freedom is gone, but the whole bunch of problems is zero. The only thing you have is the small, is Q1 of the smaller direction. The possibility of turning on the plot is that you know this is.
If not, then we sink, can you get
it? Okay, thank you.